Everything Old is New Again is sponsored by the law office of Douglas Viviani. Douglas Viviani has been providing quality legal service for over 26 years. We're a general practice firm and can handle any legal matter that you may have for a reasonable fee. If you were involved in a car accident, starting a business, planning your estate, or need a criminal attorney, please call 631-681-1910 or email us at vivianilaw@aol.com for a free consultation. Get the justice you deserve. Contact the law office of Douglas Viviani at vivianilaw@aol.com.
So how about this horse, Bud? Bazooka.
Oh, anything you want to know about Bazooka, ask me. He's a good mutter.
I beg your pardon?
Bazooka, he's a good mutter.
He's a good mutter?
You sure?
You ridiculous. How can a he be a mutter?
Sometimes a he is a better mutter than a she.
A he is a better mutter than a she?
Sure.
A she has got to be a mutter, not a he. A he no. can't be a mutter. A she is a mutter. And no. A he can't be a better mutter than a she.
Sure he can.
He can't.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything Old is New Again with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen right now, listening to that old Abbott and Costello routine. We're going to discuss for the next two shows horse racing, and is it alive or dead? The first question I have, and we have a guest here tonight, is John Cervita. He owns horses. He's an aficionado extraordinaire of the horse racing game. Thoroughbreds are his middle name. Long story short on this, before we get into the topic, some people may not even understand that that routine, which, by the way, was from the 1940s when horse racing was at its peak on its daily attendance, if you will. People would go to horse races like a baseball game, 30, 20, 30,000 to Belmont every day. But what does it mean to have a mutter? What is that all about? If you don't understand that, you don't even understand the joke. John?
Yeah, the basic premise with a mutter is a horse that could run good in the mud. It sounds like mother, but it's mutter. Years ago, the racing form would have special designations of what horse was a mutter, a superior mutter, an excellent mutter. And that was all based upon the breeding of the horse. Certain horses.
What is it? Who cares if a horse can ride? Well, I guess race in the mud or not.
I care. It slows you down, right? If you're not good in the mud.
Some go slower. Some go faster.
Right.
I mean, some horses like the grass. Some horses like the dirt. Some horses like the stop.
How do they figure out? Before we get into this topic, I mean, I'm going interested in this already.
We're off to the races.
We're off to the races. What's up with mudders? Like, how do you know if I'm a trainer that this horse likes to run in mud?
I'll give you two examples. The first one is physically, you can look at a horse's foot, the hoof. Certain horses have a higher hoof, a lower hoof, a bigger hoof. So sometimes when you're going through slop, wetty track, you need to have a big, just like a camel when they go through the sand. It depends on the size of the hoof.
Because we're all experts in camels. That actually makes a lot of sense to me now, I think.
Yeah, so they say,
it is a bumpy ride on a camel when he's going through the sand.
Yeah. So imagine going through slop. Imagine being right. A jockey, being behind another horse and getting all that, you know, pushed into his eyes. That's why sometimes jockeys even wear multiple goggles. People don't realize they may have 4, 5, 6 goggles on at a time, and they actually flip them off during the race.
Really?
And they expose them onto the track. Some put a saran wrap actually over so they don't use as much goggles.
So you can see from that answer, listen, let's face it, I'm in over my head.
Oh,
Dave's in
way
over his
head.
But we've got the right man here to talk to us about this. I want to just go into, just for a moment, the attendance to show that I think that racing is alive and well. Maybe not the daily type of racing where we go as a, you know, as a baseball fan or whatever, that kind of attendance, 20 or 30,000 per. But there was 164,000 people at the Kentucky Derby this year. 124 at the Preakness. And
124,000.
Yeah, that's okay. True. Yeah, thank you.
Right.
Tried to use a shorthand. I can never get away with it. And 134,000 at the Belmont Stakes for the Triple Crown. So, John, does that translate to the fact that this is alive and well, or is the fact that the daily attendance, which is, I think we can agree, is way down, has some effect on that argument?
Well, to talk about daily attendance currently, if you look, some papers don't even list the attendance anymore. The track gave up the attendance. Some don't even have turnstiles. You go down to Florida Gulfstream, there's not even a turnstile where you go through to enter the track. So they don't even keep track of the actual attendance. But I think horse racing is alive and doing well. The big races, Belmont Stakes, Triple Crown, Breeders' Cup, they're going to bring out the crowds. I mean, I go to the track a lot. I see a lot of young people there. I see a lot of old people there. You see all types of people going to the track. An average attendance now in New York is less than $2,000 to 2,000 people a day.
Hmm.
It's terrible.
Said by a real gambler, $2,000, I mean,
$2,000. Yeah, you get money right away. We're not the track. You have to focus on the money.
All right, so that's actually one of the first questions I have. Now,
yes.
I'd really like to go with you guys to the track because I'm doing nothing these days. I've got these stereotypes about horse racing. I know there's horses and these little people that run them and or ride them, and people bet. I Googled the basics of horse racing, and every response I got on the screen had to do with betting, right? So, John, can you give me, as a complete novice, five reasons why I should be going to the track with you guys?
The first reason is, obviously, you can make money. But you don't go to the track to make money. You go to the track to have a good time.
Okay.
So that's the second reason.
All right.
And in order to have a good time, you have to be entertained. You're not only going to be entertained by the horses, which are the performers, you're going to be entertained by the people at the track. There's a lot of characters at the track.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know, you have to see the way people dress, how they act, how they react. Just watching somebody watching a race is a show in itself. I could watch people at the track and not even look at the TV screen where the races are or look at the horses, and it's a complete circus sometimes. People throw their papers. You know, you hold a racing room, you throw it at the TV screen. You know, this guy smoking cigars and cigarettes.
I need to talk
drinks.
For a second. I go to the track with John once in a while, and he rolls up the program, and he's hitting it on his lap if he's got money on a particular horse or owns that particular horse. And he's whipping himself, if you will, as if he was the horse, trying to get that horse to come in.
Nice.
That's right.
The reason why I know that is because I've watched him, and that's kind of bizarre, but you don't know that about someone they watch when they hit a home run.
Right,
you don't know what your
true.
Buddy does when a home run's hit. You know.
Well, you also could whip somebody else, because if you have the other horse than me and you're going to get up two, I'm going to get up three. I start hitting you with my racing form that's rolled up. You know, the racing form years ago was a big piece. It looked like the New York Times. It was a
right.
big folded paper, and it was just a system into folding the paper so you could read the actual race.
Huh.
You know, now they make it a booklet. The racing form is now a booklet that, you know, it doesn't have the same pizzazz. When you roll it up and you want to have a whip, you know, you got to hit it like that, you know. With the paper, it was long. It looked like a whip.
I got the bruises to show for it. That's for sure. Not the pocketbook, but the bruises to show for it. Let's take a listen to a race. Back in the day, there was a horse by the name of Seabiscuit. I'm not going to point out just like that's the only horse that existed. But, of course, there was a great book by Laura Hildenbrand. There was a terrific movie that brought the horse racing world of 1938 alive. And to me, the answer to that question, that you are one of the five, is that that's, to me, the 2 minutes of a horse race, the 2.5 minutes, wherever it might be, is the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, without question, presuming it's the right race.
That race would be a mile and a quarter.
Okay.
Approximately.
There you go. And to me, we'll get into what that means in a minute, but to me...
I know what a mile and a quarter is, Doug.
Well, the idea that you can predict, forget the money, but you can prove, because you bet on a particular horse, I'm going to predict from looking at the racing form and so forth, that this horse is going to come into first. And to cheer that horse in other words, you know when the home run is going to be hit. You know when that race is starting at 2:05. You know it's ending at 2:07. You don't know what's going to happen in between, but it's tremendously exciting. Let's listen to the end of the race of Seabiscuit against War Admiral for the Triple Crown winner, War Admiral, in 1938.
Seabiscuit leads by a length. Now Seabiscuit by a length and a half. Wolf has put away his whip. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit is the winner by four lengths. And you never saw such a wild crowd.
Never saw such a wild crowd. I mean, that's 1938. The place went crazy. That was a match race just between two horses.
Oh, just those two were racing?
Just those two horses. So, John, give us a little something that brings us back. Your grandfather was a fan
a
of
mutter.
Horses. Your dad was a mutter.
My mother was a mutter.
Tell us a little bit. You're going out 2 minutes on this side of the commercials, but tell us a little bit about what the track was like in their day, what they told you what it was like.
Crowded. People were dressed properly. Men wore suits, sports jackets, hats, ties. Women wore dresses. They wore hats also. That's a different feeling now. You see that on the big day of racing. But that little clip reminds you of East Coast, West Coast. That's what that basically was. You know, you had the New York crowd and you had the California crowd.
Oh, really?
And I've been to racing in California, and it's a different crowd there than the New York crowd. The New York crowd could be a little tougher, could be a little different. The West Coast crowd loves racing just as much as us. But it is that whole rivalry. And you have jockeys that only ride in California as jockeys that ride in New York.
But when your grandfather went to the races, or your dad went to the races back in the day, besides it was a crowd and wearing a suit, did they sit in restaurants? Did they eat hot dogs? Did they do what we're doing now?
Yeah, what was the experience like?
I don't think there was much eating going on back then. Years ago, it was only 7 races as opposed to sometimes it's 9, 10, 11 races a day. Belmont Stakes race, they had 13 races. So there wasn't time to really eat, but they did drink at that time. You know, and they had a beer, and it was very sociable. It's like when you go to even Europe with the horse racing. Well, you know, it's all about being there and just having the camaraderie with the other patrons.
Also, the horses themselves, didn't they run longer? You know, you would get to know the names of horses even back then.
Well, everybody had a regular favorite a lot of times. You know, you would follow a horse, and every, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, you'd go to watch him run.
So you would know, you're going with your buddy, you go, hey, Johnny Jones is running today, John, let's go to the track, because that particular horse you followed.
Correct.
And you guys follow NASCAR these days, right?
Right.
Your favorite racer.
Now it's a little different, right? Why don't we have that now in a short period of time? Brief discussion.
Well, the reason you don't have it now is horses only run maybe 8 to 10 times a year now. So it's hard to follow horses not running.
Because the owners are putting them out to stud, basically.
Well, yes.
How many times did they used to run per year?
They could run 30 times. They would run.
Wow.
At least every 2 weeks.
So we'll pick this up on Everything Old is New Again right after the commercials. Thank you for listening.
This portion of Everything Old is New Again is sponsored by ResumeDoctorInc.com. When you're seeking to change your career, apply for a promotion, or trying to find a job, your resume is the first thing that's seen that represents you to a potential employer. Make sure your resume makes a clear, concise, and professional impression of who you are so you can get that job interview. Send your current resume to ResumeDoctorInc@AOL.com for a free online review. You'll receive a timely reply with a reasonable quote to properly prepare your resume. Let them make sure you have a resume that will get you noticed. Send your resume or questions to ResumeDoctorInc@AOL.com. That's ResumeDoctorInc@AOL.com.
You are at the races with Douglas Viviani, John Servitor, our special guest, and horse racing aficionado, and of course my co-host David Cohen, and we are Everything Old is New Again. We're going to take a trip to the races now for this portion of the show and see what is it like to experience a day at the races with John and myself at Belmont.
Right. Well, you gave me in the first part, you gave me some, you know, interesting reasons to go. You know, but most importantly, I think the people. That was really funny.
Right.
And also, you know, just the horse race itself, like your point about the most exciting 2 minutes. I get that. I think that's pretty neat. Let's say I wanted to bring my kids, though, okay? I go with you guys. I love it. Now I want to come back with the family. So, you know, a lot of questions about the kids. Number one, is it appropriate for them? Would they enjoy it? And how do you explain the betting, which is such a large part of this whole thing, to them?
Well, I think you have to take a venue by venue. Talking about Belmont, I mean, that's a great big facility. Think about a picnic. How often do you want to go to a park with a picnic with your kids? Most people really don't do it. They go to the beach. But to actually bring food and coolers and bring the children there, Belmont has a great backyard. Saratoga is the number one in the world. I mean, people go there 8 o'clock in the morning. They get their picnic tables. They put down their chairs. They have their
coolers.
You mean
outside the track
outside
itself?
Outside, behind the building.
Like tailgating,
in the backyard.
Like for a football game?
Yes,
that's
absolutely
right.
Tailgating.
That's
it's
a good
great
point. Just as an idea, if you go to Yankee Stadium, for example, nothing happens until you get into Yankee Stadium.
Right.
If Belmont or Saratoga or even Monmouth down in New Jersey, there's a lot going on. You go through the gates, of course, but the gates open up into a park area,
really?
And of course, an area where horses will be trotted around later on. So, or before each race,
is my kid going to get stepped on by a horse?
No.
If they're
no, they have them in a paddock. It's called a paddock where they have the horses in a special area where the trainers are and the grooms are. But you get really close to the horses, and the kids enjoy that.
Oh, and wow. Even and the jockeys. I mean, jockeys are athletes, and if you're following this, you're right next to, you know, whoever is the athlete of the day, so to speak.
Even better than that, at Saratoga, the jockeys actually walk through the crowd and sign autographs on the programs.
So you're having a picnic. I'm just trying to visualize this, right? I'm bringing a blanket.
You can blanket. You can bring folding chairs. You can bring a cooler. You could bring 6 foot heroes in. You could bring pizza in. You could bring whatever you want in.
And so we're sitting on the grass on a blanket,
yes,
right where the horses run.
Well,
we're
in
the
backyard.
Come out.
Where they come out in the backyard.
Before the race. Now remember, now the Yankee Stadium, if you will, is behind you, in front of you. For the race, You could either watch it on a screen or you go into the stadium for that particular race. Remember, the races are about 20, 25 minutes in between each race.
Okay.
If you saw the Kentucky Derby, you could see the infield crowd is what they call it.
Right.
They have 20, 30,000 people on the infield.
Oh, that I know. So you're talking about the infield. So we go inside the circle.
That's one part, but we also have outside behind the track.
Right. Belmont and Saratoga and the other ones.
I see.
Outside the track is where there's beautiful grounds,
beautiful
facilities.
Trees, old
shade.
Trees.
My wife needs to be in the shade.
Plenty of
all the
shade.
Time.
They even have amusements for the kids. They'll have concerts. Now, Belmont has concerts on Friday nights there. They have pony rides for the kids. They have all sorts of activities back there. So they try to make it family-oriented, actually.
All right. Any of these old man bettors going to, like, accidentally spit on my kid? Or,
no, they're
going to
avoid
separated from us somehow?
No, they're not separated. They don't have to be separated. But what ends up happening is they're going to be by the TVs watching the races.
They're
going to be by the windows. They're going to be by the bar. So they do have a picnic area, let's call it, and then you have the racetrack area.
And we just touched upon something that's interesting. Every so often, the races have different specials. They had at Belmont on May 31st an autograph session with all the jockeys there. Could have come get free autographs just to get involved. Yeah. On July 5th, they've got a Stars and Stripes Racing Festival. They've had that. And that's where they've got 20 different trucks of food. You know me with the food. They've got the food truck festival there. They had Andy's Italian Ices. They had Pizza on Wheels, Hibachi Heaven, Papaya King, Gorilla Cheese, Carl's Steaks, El Paso, Hot Dogs Galore, Mr. Smith's Seafood. So, I mean, there's that atmosphere as well. It's a fun... Oh, by the way, on Fridays, right, John? At the track, they've got what they call Party in the Park through till July 13th.
I think every Friday afternoon, they have a late post, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then they have a concert in the back, so people really stay there.
Right. Has it always been like that, or is this a way they're trying to attract
people? This is to
people?
Regenerate the crowd and keep the younger crowd coming, because, you know, things do get old, and then you have to regenerate and make them new again.
Well, speaking about, there you go. And speaking about
I like
old,
this guy.
Nice segue. This is Everything Old is New Again. Please email us your questions or comments or compliments to oldnewagain@aol.com. And if you've missed any of our previous shows, please go to our website and listen to the podcast at everythingoldisnewagain.biz. We didn't really answer the question, though, that you had, which I think is a significant question about the gambling and your family. How do you address that issue?
Well, obviously, children shouldn't be gambling, but, you know, I think the part of having children at the track with you, or generations, sometimes there's children with the parents and the grandparents there. It's just like going to Yankee Stadium. You know, you get to see all the horses and you get to be there. As a matter of fact, this year I went with my four children, went to the Belmont Stakes. We thought there would be a Triple Crown. We wanted to be together as a family to see the Triple Crown live, if it happened. And it didn't happen, but we had a great day.
By the way, to just bring a side topic, the World Series, what would you call this, the World Series of horse racing every year? Is it the Triple Crown?
No, it's the Breeders' Cup. In the fall, as horses go through the summer of racing, they get to their prime time, especially the three-year-olds. The horses that ran in the Triple Crown is only for three-year-old horses. There's older horses, horses run 4, 5, 6 years old. So in the fall, generally the last week of October, beginning of November, they have what they call the Breeders' Cup. That's where they put the big money on the line. They have a race, $5 million race. They have multiple million-dollar races. It's the richest day in history of racing in the United States. Unfortunately, now Dubai has what they call the Dubai Cup, where now that's the richest day in racing.
All right. So now when you say richest day, we're talking about for David, you know, every race, there's a purse at the end of the race that the winning horses split.
The owners actually split, not the horses.
The horses eventually get it, believe it or not, through the training costs and everything else, right. I'm sure. But long story short, you're right. But the point is that these purses on that particular day are $1 million purses instead of, let's say, $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 purses.
More incentive, in other words.
And the better horses would, of course, apply for those.
And but it's more gambling. They set a record with all the gambling for Breeders' Cup.
But speaking of gambling, with the children, in my view, like anything else, I don't want my children not to know or be exposed to anything that I feel may appeal to their prurient interest, so to speak. I want them to be exposed to gambling, and in horse racing, you could go to the track, and we'll talk about this next show next week. But you can go to the track and bet $2 on a race. But I want my child to know that it exists, that it's not forbidden, but as the saying says, bet with your head, not over it. Teach them how to have money management discussion.
Oh, come on.
And I'm not going to put it in that phrase, but you've got to expose them to horse racing and to gambling. Otherwise, they're going to go berserk.
But I think, a mathematical term.
Well, I think the money management is one thing, but I think actually what they call handicap, and that's when you actually pick the horses. You read about them. You read who's the mother, who's the father, what races they had, what jockeys they had. When you get into that, I think the children pick up.
Yeah, that's
that.
Interesting.
And they're educated to some because they're reading number one, which is a good thing.
Right.
There's a lot of math involved. There's numbers. There's times. There's what they call speed figures. So when you go through all this, children are somewhat competitive too. So by them all taking a turn and trying to come up with the winner, and we all of us could read that paper and everybody could come with a different horse, but only one of us could win.
And then you
right.
get the bragging
Hopefully.
Rights. I don't give it $2 or 10
that's
cents.
Right.
You get bragging rights that I predicted the future.
That's fun.
You know, that's really fun about it. But,
can you bet your kid? Do they take, what kind of wagers can you make?
We'll cover that next week. John, back to the track itself. I mean, there is that discussion or fear of your child being exposed to some element. Again, in the park grounds, I don't feel that that's going to be even a concern.
So it's like not in their face if it doesn't need to be, right?
You can, correct. They would never even know the horse actually running on the track because you'd be on the other side where there'll be TVs and a lot of other activities going on. So they wouldn't even see the horse. The best part is to bring the kids to the front side of the track and put them in the stand so they can actually watch the race live. And the closer you get, I'll give you a little word for today. It's called rail bird. You could go down to the rail and actually get as close as you can to the horses running by you, which is an experience when a horse runs by you at full speed. And you hear them actually being whipped.
Oh, wow.
And you hear the jockeys actually making sounds.
How do you do that? How do you get so close?
You just walk right down.
Really?
Right down to the rail. So if you do that, you're a rail bird.
And we'll every little kid, I mean, I have a 5 and a 2-year-old. Angelica is entranced when she looks at animals and sees animals
most
anywhere.
Most children are.
You know, so yeah. So, I mean, this, and as they parade out before every race, again, we were talking about the paddock. There's a little, what do you call that circle area?
That's a paddock area.
Paddock.
And so, they like the color of the horses, like the color of the jockey silks. So people pick just the colors sometimes.
Right. And the kids look at it and I like this. Angelica has done this. I like this horse. This one's sweating. I don't like that one. This one's a certain color. I like that. So it's exciting for them.
I'm with you guys. I like this. We're going to talk about this on the next show, right?
Next show right now, for some reason, the Lone Ranger always reminds me of horse racing. So we're going to go out with that.
Everything Old is New Again is sponsored by the Law Office of Douglas Viviani. Douglas Viviani has been providing quality legal service for over 26 years. We're a general practice firm and can handle any legal matter you may have for a reasonable fee. If you're involved in a car accident, starting a business, planning your estate, or need a criminal attorney, please call 631-681-1910 or email us at vivianilaw@aol.com for a free consultation. Get the justice you deserve. Contact the Law Office of Douglas Viviani at vivianilaw@aol.com.
Excuse me, I'm taking a survey. Who do you like?
I like the 2-horse. It's got front revs. I always bet a horse with front revs.
Excuse me, I'm taking a survey.
I'm telling you, go for your lungs. The big money on the 4-horse. He's the only close. I mean, real money.
Who do you like?
I like the 6. That's the horse. That's it.
Uh-huh. Why?
I always bet on 5.
Who do you like?
Up yours. The number 1 horse.
Thank you.
I like the 4. Number 4. 4.
These other nags are going to die. They're so tired. I get to the 8th pole. They look like they're standing still at a bus stop. They go by.
I'm taking a survey, Jack. You take your own survey.
I like the 6.
I like the 4 horse.
The 1 horse.
I like the 6 horse.
Uh-huh.
Everything old is new again.
Let it ride.
Wait. This is Douglas Viviani at Everything Old is New Again. We are enjoying a discussion continued from last week with our special guest, John Cervita, a horse racing aficionado, been in the field for at least 30 years on and off, enjoying the game, if you will. I'm here also with David Cohen. And we're going to express today what it's like to be at the track and to enjoy betting the proper way. What is betting all about? How does betting work? That's a clip from Let It Ride, a great movie starring Richard Dreyfuss, where he took the survey of people around the stadium, around the park, if you will. And if you notice, none of the horses that they said you should bet on, he bet on. He bet on the number 3 because he figured that all of their advice is wrong. And if they're not picking a horse, I'm going to go for that one. That was his system. I'm sure there are more systems. How many systems do you think you've been exposed to, John, in your experience over the last 30 years that people have come to you and said, I've got a system, and this is how I'm going to win?
Thousands. Believe it or not, thousands of systems. Whether it be they're betting the gray horse, whether it be they're betting a certain trainer, whether it's a distance, a grass specialist, someone says, I always win on the grass, whether they win on the mud, everybody's got a system.
Or a jockey, what was that fellow's name, Semin on the green? Is that
Semin on the green, Jean-Luc Semin on the green, correct.
So is he still a jockey?
He's not riding anymore.
All right, so I mean, that would, but even, you know, someone that's just outside the game a little bit myself, I was familiar with that. There are certain jockeys you bet on, but let's talk about betting in general. What it was like back in the day, how did betting start, or what was the betting scene like back in the day?
Well, the real way it started is how they still do it in England, Ireland. They actually have bookies. They have actual bookmakers that have a booth that they stand at, and they actually will take your bet. And you put $2 to win or $2 to place or whatever you want. It basically was straight wagering, as they call it. Win first, play second, show third. So you bet on a horse to come first, second, or third. So you actually would go to a window before there was computers, and you would just say you would go to $2 win window, and you would just say, give me the one. And the guy would punch the button, the one, and have it print out a ticket on the one horse. This is before we had fancy computers. So you would just stick with win, place, and show. For example, you know, most people back then were going to track for entertainment. They weren't going to make a lot of money. If you bet $2 and you make $8, it's not a lot of money, but they didn't want to lose money. So my grandfather, for instance, you know, he would go to the track, and he would go there for 7 races a day, and he'd only put $2 to show on a horse just to make 10 cents. He'd get back 210. And that was his day to race. He was just going to have fun. He wasn't really there to make money. Now it's the complete opposite today. Now when you talk about wagering, you don't only have win, place, and show. You have exacta. You bet first and second. You have trifectas, first, second, and third. You have superfecta, first, second, third, and fourth in the same race.
Now, talking about your grandfather and his betting back in the day, obviously win means the horse came in first place or is going to come in first place. Win place means they're going to come in first or second and you win. Show first, second, or third and they're going to win. I mean, just to get an idea.
Why don't they just say first, second, and third?
Well, you had to come up with something different to keep people interested, I guess.
Okay. Yeah,
good question, but right. I mean, that at least is the basics. Now, again, John's saying there are different types of
bets. They're called exotics.
Now.
Exotics. Wagering.
And so if you go to a track now, you can bet what I just said, but you could also bet, like John said, all those different combinations. And then if you want to bet, let's say, an exacta, which we call, you know, the race is going to come in, the two horses are going to come in first and second. You could do an exacta box to make it more complicated where you pick the number one horse and the number five horse and you say one's going to come in first, five is going to come in second, or the reverse. And that's called a box, right, John?
Right, yes. And then you have it with the triple box, they have a superfecta box. Actually, when you go to the track, you should get the program. In the program, they have a wagering information guide, and they have how to wager. And they actually list all the types of wagers you can make and what the potential payouts are. Obviously, the more complicated or exotic the wager is, the more you can make. And that's the younger generation now. Now they want to go and bet $2 and try to win $2,000. Where years ago, they would bet $2 to make $2.
Right. The greed of our society comes through, if you will, or the quick money. But now you just mentioned the program, correct?
Correct.
And now with a program, you're going to have a list of the horses running. And now there are a lot of different factors in each particular race. What are the factors of each race, for example?
Well, the factor, first of all, is the distance of the race, whether it's on the grass or the dirt, the track condition, what the track is like that day, whether it was raining or not. Sometimes they take the races off the grass. Scratches are important. Scratch is when someone's not running. So the first thing you do when you get to the track is you would check what they call the scratch board. And on the scratch board, it lists all the horses that are out for that day. It would also list if there was changes to the program, meaning a jockey may have had too much macaroni the night before, and it could be overweight. So when they say a guy's overweight, he's supposed to ride at a certain weight in that race, 112 pounds. Sometimes they're coming in 114 pounds. Now, you think it may not matter, but sometimes it does matter. Those pounds matter.
So and how do I know if he ate too much?
He's overweight.
Did it actually say that?
It'll say overweight 2 pounds. They wouldn't say because he ate too much, but sometimes maybe they do put on weight, these jockeys, believe it or not. It's hard for a grown man to maintain a weight of 100 pounds and hold back a thoroughbred horse that weighs 2,500 pounds.
That would be a great diet plan, wouldn't it? You wake up in the morning and you look at the board and you see, you know, overweight 2 pounds every morning. That's the first thing you see.
Well, that's a great point, though. Let's talk about the jockey for a moment, because on the racing form, you will also have the list of the jockey. And if you look somewhere on the form, it'll be their percentage winnings for that particular meet or that season.
And for the year sometimes, too.
Right.
So you'll see how successful they are.
Right. Now, that's not always, you know, a guarantee, but if he's batting, let's say, 600 or, you know, 60% of the time versus 15% of the time, that might be something you consider saying, I may, you know, bet on this particular horse.
Also depends on the distance. Some jockeys are better at shorter distance on horse. Some are better at longer distance. They could judge a race better. Some are better on the grass, like you said.
Well, so, I mean, our jockeys, athletes, let's look at that for a second. I mean, look at these
absolutely
guys. Yeah.
Absolutely. They're all muscle. 100 pounds of muscle.
And these guys are special guys. I mean, you see them walking around, and they're wearing these funny outfits, if you will. But if you were to look at them, and they've got specials and things, you see them in the locker room or whatever. Like you said, full, you know, all muscle, no fat whatsoever. Of course, they've got to control how much, you know.
2,500 pounds.
2,500 pounds for a horse, and the guy's 100 pounds.
That's right. Running 35 right. miles an hour.
Right. So think about that. And changing the goggles, as you said, also, and whipping this horse. I
mean, and looking where to go, and where to ride, and what to do.
So there is this huge sport to it besides the gambling, you know. So now you've got the racing form. You've crossed off the horses that are not running. You've circled, you know, the jockeys, let's say, that you like because they've got certain percentages. Then you're looking at what else when you...
Well, the trainer's important, obviously. And then you look at post position, believe it or not. If a horse is coming out of post position 12 as opposed to post position 1, that could change how a horse does.
Because he's got more track to cover.
Yes, because he's got to come over, correct.
Right.
And if it depends on how many turns they're going around. Is it a one-turn race, a two-turn race? So it depends. Sometimes the one hole could be good, meaning you're close to the rail, but sometimes you get blocked out. That's what happens in Kentucky Derby. They have 20 horses going that race. And if anybody gets the one hole, they're not going to win the race. And if they get the 20 hole, a lot of times they're not going to win the race.
Because they're going to get blocked out.
Yeah,
someone
there's
else
too
is
much competition in there.
Yeah, right. So now you're looking at, when you said trainer, there's also percentages on the trainer. So maybe you're looking for, you know, a horse that has a trainer that has a nice winning percentage, a jockey that has a nice winning percentage. But what's the trouble if you're doing that? And of course, we talk about math, and that's, of course, important and for the kids to look at and see what that's all about. But what if you're betting on a horse, let's say that the jockey is the best jockey and the trainer is the best trainer? What are the odds, if you
well,
will, on that
you're
horse?
Well, you're going to be a big favorite, obviously. And that's why you're looking to beat that. But let me tell you just a
little. Well, why is it going to be a big favorite? What does it mean to be a big favorite?
The favorite means you're not going to make any money. Bet $2, you may only get back $2.50 or $2.40.
Well, let's talk about that. So the odds on that one might be, let's say, 2-1 as opposed to 5-1. What does it mean, 2-1?
2-1 means for every dollar you bet, you get $2 back. Plus your dollar you bet. So you get three, you know, you make your money back. Plus. But just going back to that point, just briefly, though, about those percentages. Think about when we didn't have computers and you didn't have those percentages. People kept this in their mind. The mind was the computer. So you knew how good a jockey was. You knew how good a trainer was. You knew the stats of the mother and the father of these horses. So that's the difference from back then to now. Now you open up the paper, everything's here. Every percentage.
Yeah,
every statistic is here.
There's more there than you want. So we'll talk about the racing form, which is different than racing program, which gives you additional information. And then we'll try to summarize for you.
Just make it simple for me.
Exactly, a general idea. So we'll come back in a few seconds here on Everything Old is New Again. And please, please listen to our podcast at everythingoldisnewagain.biz if you haven't heard a past show. And we'll be right back on the other side of the commercials.
This portion of Everything Old is New Again is sponsored by ResumeDoctorInc.com. When you're seeking to change your career, apply for a promotion, or trying to find a job, your resume is the first thing that is seen that represents you to a potential employer. Make sure your resume makes a clear, concise, and professional impression of who you are so you can get that job interview. Send your current resume to ResumeDoctorInc@AOL.com for a free online review. You'll receive a timely reply with a reasonable quote to properly prepare your resume. Let them make sure you have a resume that will get you noticed. Send your resume or questions to ResumeDoctorInc@AOL.com. That's ResumeDoctorInc@AOL.com.
Fire, affirmed under a left-hand whip. Alidar on the outside driving. Affirmed at Alidar, heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as he come onto the wire. At the finish, it's going to be dead tight.
and listen to that crowd. That's if you really focus on that, that if you listen and understand what that was affirmed's victory at Belmont, the last Triple Crown winner in 1978. But that excitement, that thrill, how many of those people you think had that horse as in their betting scenario?
A lot of them still have the tickets.
Really?
People buy the tickets and save them as a souvenir. They don't catch it. The track loves a day like that.
So that horse probably was a favorite, I'm presuming. I mean, we don't remember much.
Absolutely.
So you bet $20 and it came in. You would have come out with, let's say, $35, but instead you keep that ticket because why?
Well, most people aren't going to bet the $20. They bet $2 because they're not that generous. They're not going to let the track keeps all that money, obviously.
That's true.
So they're not going to let the track keep $20. But the reason they do is because maybe they get a frame, a picture of the horse, put in a frame, put the ticket in there. Maybe one day you get the jockey or trainer to sign it. It's a great souvenir. It's a great item, and it's worth some money.
Yeah, and again, you have predicted the future. You were the one that picked that horse. You know, you could predict and talk about that for generations to come.
This year at the Belmont Stakes, we ran into Steve Coburn, the owner of California Chrome, and we took a picture when we had him sign the program, you know, next to the horse's name.
Because
in case he happened to win, that would be a great souvenir.
Sure. Right. See that? All right. Back to the idea of betting. There's some other factors involved. Not to get too complicated, but you do hear these two terms a lot. You hear this horse is a closer or this horse is a speed horse. What does that mean?
A speed horse is a horse that wants to break first and stay first all the way and try to steal the race, as we call it, try to go to the lead and steal the race. A closer is a horse that's going to stay back and make a run at the end or stalk from a stalking position and try to come late. And that's what happened in the Belmont Stakes this year. You know, obviously.
So are these horses trained to do that or are they just like that naturally?
Both, but they're also bred that way. If you take the father was fast and the mother was fast, the horse, that baby's going to be fast.
Okay.
You know, so it's all part of the breeding, too. So that's part of studying the horse racing is to know who the mother and father was to see if this horse could go fast or long.
And that brings up a point. If you now get off of the program, but by the racing form, which is a different document, that's more or less a newspaper, if you will. It's a pretty big paper you'll see at the track, and you'll see it, you know, in your card store. I get one over there.
Yeah.
Or you can buy it online now. You can get downloaded. I download them, and I make my predictions, so to speak, do my handicapping the night before. So when I go to the track, I don't have to worry about all this stuff. I've already got my horses picked out, and I can enjoy.
But don't you need to see who the scratches are and if the jockey ate too much pasta and all
you
that
do.
Kind of stuff.
You do if you
modify, yeah. You modify.
Absolutely. You modify a little bit, but I've done a lot of my homework ahead of time instead of scrambling for those 20 minutes in between the races figuring all this stuff out. Okay. Anyway, back to the racing form. The form will have what kind of information do you look for on the form that shows you this particular horse is a closer or this horse is a speed horse?
Well, generally, you know, they'll give the distance of the race, and then they give what they call a position order. It'll say if the horse started at a post position 8, and then, you know, they'll show that he was 5th, then he was 4th, then he was 2nd, and then he won. That means he closed.
So
if it says 1-1-1-1-1, that means he was a speed horse, right, to the lead.
So what you'll see is what we're talking about is past performances. So horse X, you look at the past, but you can see 12 of the last races they ran, and if they're all like 1-2, 1-2, 1-1-1, you know it's a speed horse. If you see it started at 8, then went to 6, then went to... In other words, they'll show you at every quarter mile, right?
Okay.
Where the horse was in the race. So those are those numbers that follow the horse. People don't understand what those... What are the 6 numbers?
It could be about 7 numbers.
It depends on the length of the race. You'll see those numbers, and now you know, oh, that's a horse as a closer, or that's a speed horse. Now, how do you know if a closer or a speed horse is going to win a particular race? Why would you pick one versus the other?
He might be a mutter.
Or he might...
no one. And, you know, talking to someone who doesn't go to track, who wants to go to track, I think, you know, people aren't always interested in reading the racing form. They're going to want to look at the horse and make their own predictions based upon what the horse looks like, the color, like I said, the number. People bet numbers. People bet their home address. People bet
When you say bet the color, I mean I like brown. Not that he looks
black.
A little pale today.
No. Okay. No. Black, gray. Also, people bet names. We talked about names. You know, people like to bet names. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, a horse named Little Nicky, like my son. If that horse is running, my son might come over and say, Dad, should I bet that horse? And I'm like, I'm going to tell him yes. I'm not going to say no, because if I say no and a horse wins, I'm in trouble.
I also know John's got a buddy of his. We've gone a couple of times, and he has, believe it or not, if I'm right about this, I've just observed this from the outside looking in, favorite numbers. So all of a sudden, he'll say, you know, he'll always bet on the, making it up, the number three horse. And all of a sudden, the three horse comes in. That's my number. I can't believe it. I won. Like, he loves a number.
Yeah.
And
that's, am I wrong? Yeah, he actually likes multiple numbers. He'll bet like, he'll bet like his, you know, birthday, you know, 719. Right. And that'll be someone's anniversary, wedding anniversary. And that's what people bet for a triple. And they root on that number. Betting on names, you know, people, they use people's names, you know, Michael, John, Lori, Doug, you know, they use the names. So people are always going to bet on those horses right off the bat.
Honestly,
they actually get overbet because people bet names.
Right. If I see a comic book character, there are some in the horses, and I'll bet on that one.
You'll bet for Batman, you know, Batman.
Right,
win.
Batman's Revenge or something like whatever the name might be.
Regardless of the odds, absolutely.
So if I'm going with you guys, right, and I've dumbed it down for me a little bit. I've never bet before, okay? And all these stats and the data, it's fascinating, and I could see getting into it. But if I really don't know anything, but I want to get my feet wet, what's the easiest way for me to bet?
I think the easiest way is just pick a horse that you like in a race and probably bet win, place, and show. You bet on what they call across the board. So if your horse comes in first, second, or third, you're going to make some money. You're not there that day to get into complicated wagering. You want to keep it simple. So you're going to bet a horse that you like, put a win, place, and show, and just you root for that horse. At least you could focus. Problem that people have is when they have multiple bets going, they don't know who to root for. We have some friends of ours, Doug knows, that the race is going on. The guy's rooting for four different horses. The race ends. He says he won. He takes out his tickets. He ends up losing because he bet so many combinations. He didn't know what he had during the race.
Yeah.
So I said, I thought you liked the four. He goes, I did, but I changed my mind. I used him in a triple or I dropped him. So what ends up happening is, you know, you change your thought process. So keep it simple.
Yeah. Okay. There's two things to add to that. Number one, pigtailing on that statement. It's funny because you'll see when you go with your buddies and all of a sudden, a race will be over, and they'll make it stay with the three horse. The three horse won, and you'll hear the guy say, I love that horse. I absolutely love that horse. You turn to me and say, oh, great. Wow, that was a 5-1 horse. You must have turned it into some bucks. How'd you make out? Well, you know, I tell you, my cousin told me not to bet on that one this day. He liked the six horse, and I did an exotic with the six and the 12. So, and it's an excuse. And that's half of the fun.
That's what you hear.
Character didn't bet on the horse that he loves.
That ends up happening. If you talk to too many people, you change your mind. So I would say, if you like something, just bet it. If it's 50-1, if it's 5-1, just bet what you like.
Should I just go for the 2-1 or the, you know, the favorite?
No. The favorites don't win all the time.
But this is me, right? I don't know anything about these
I would
horses.
Tell you to bet a long shot.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that gives you a kick.
More excitement, more storytelling. Even if you hit the favorite, favorites win about 30% of the time, maybe even less, 28% of the time. Saratoga is known as the graveyard of favorites. Because all the favorites lose at Saratoga. So what happens is you don't want to bet the favorite. I would tell you not to bet the favorite.
So could I put as little as a dollar?
Like yes, on a you 20 actually to can one bet. Horse? You could put a dollar now. They changed all the wage structures down. You can even put, you know, 50 cents on a triple now. They've reduced it so people will make more bets.
Right. And I went to Monmouth with my in-law lives down there. My father-in-law lives down there. We went with my wife and the kids, and we went to the track. We just went for one race, two races, just to have some fun. And we bet on the long shot. That was a year and a half ago. We still talk about it because we put $2 on it, and we went ahead and won $35. It was like, you know, the biggest thing on the
planet. That's what you want. You want a story. Right. The track's all about stories. So we hope that when you leave, you say, I made $50 on this long shot, not that I made $1.80.
Right, exactly.
That was really exciting. Thank you for that story.
Smart, yeah, right.
The other thing is that I would say is on the racing form, which is the newspaper of the track, of the horses running for that day, all the way to the right, there's a paragraph about every single horse. Four or five sentences, maybe three sentences. And it summarizes what we say, so it kind of, if you're interested in this idea of what's going on here, that will summarize for you what we're saying a little
bit. Well, they have what they call public handicappers. There's a track handicapper who will have something in there, and he tells you what his version of that horse is. And then you have these tip sheets. That's something Doug always asks about tip sheets, is where somebody actually picks three horses every race, and you have to pay for a buck. And it's actually a closed document. And guys were known over the years to say, I like Lawton Sheet. I like the Wizard. The Wizard's still around, as a matter of fact. So people will go and just buy that sheet.
You have no idea what's on the sheet. You're just trusting
the person. So years ago, it used to be $1. It's $5. It's $10. There's even some more expensive ones that you can go online and pay, like, you know, $75 for a person's picks.
Wow.
So if you don't want to, if you don't want to pick them yourself, you have someone else
you
pick
don't
them
have to
it.
Think, in other words.
You don't have you to just, think.
Wow. Or you can make up, you know, a website and start that up as your own business.
People
and,
do it.
And you got yourself a future in horse racing. You just pick them by, you know, they use picks. But, of course, you got to have some history of winning. Right. Anyway, this is a fascinating discussion. We've enjoyed it. Thank you, John, for being with us today.
Yes, thank
John
you.
Servitor's
You're
really
welcome.
Added a lot to the subject. This is Everything Old is New Again on Long Island News Radio 103.9. Please listen to the podcast at everythingoldisnewagain.biz. We will see you next week.
When are we going to the track, the three of us?
Saratoga's right around the corner.
All Beautiful. Right.